He's on knees, I tell you. Hey, everybody, how y'all doing? Get my little cheat sheet out because get up here and get nervous and forget everything. First off, thank you, Alan. Love you, man. You know, me and Alan have talked, cried together, lived together, went through shit together, been there for each other over the years, and Alan is one of those guys where I would want in my network if he wasn't in my network. So love you, man. You know, he's always giving it away. You know, we met at my home group. Did I say my name was Rick and I'm an alcoholic and an addict? You know, you get up here, man, I don't care how many times you do this, man, you're always just nervous, man. My butt crack is sweating and, you know, and my heart is pumping, you know, and got that thing in my throat that like I've been, you know, sucking on a butane lighter all night, you know, that you get that grunt in your throat kind of, man, I tell you. But Alan, I love you, man. And for the committee, thank you guys for asking me, everybody that, had a part in me being here. I mean, this is special and it's super huge. A gentleman years ago that I was sponsoring. Where's Trent? Do this, Trent. Where is it? All right, Trent. A gentleman that I was sponsoring would always say, Ricky, you need to come go to this rock thing. You need to come go to the rock with us. And I was like, oh man, I'm just too busy, man. And every time the rock came up, he was like, Ricky, you ought to come go to this rock with us, man. And the year came that I finally did and fell in love with the rock. You know, I think I did maybe 16 or 17 of them straight. And what people say happens here, you know, and that's what I love about it. You know, I caught my breath almost. I'm going to drink some water. You know, one of the greatest things I think I had when I stumbled, got bamboozled into recovery, is that I hated who I was. I hated every day I had it to wake up, had to wake up in this filthy piece of a body that I lived in. The thing that drove my recovery when I got here was the self-hatred that I had for myself. And when I got here, you guys gave me that little bit of hope that I never thought I would have. You know, I'm just like anybody else. And guys, the new guys, keep coming back. Keep doing you. Find your you here. It'll happen. It'll happen one day at a time. And, so, breaking the ice, right? So this comedian introducing this guy, right? And this is a joke. I hope it turned out to be a joke. But it's a joke. And he was like, man, I don't do drugs. I don't drink alcohol. I don't do caffeine. I don't do anything anymore. I'm just clean. I'm clean and clean. And the guy said, well, what is it you do for fun, man? What do you do for fun? And the guy said, I hide the bodies. So, you know, I'm just happy to be old drunk and a dope fiend, man. You know what I mean? You know, I found a solution to that here. You know, I don't know if it's some hide the body meetings out there, but it probably is, you know. But So, man, I'm just like anybody else. You know, I started because I didn't feel comfortable in my skin, didn't feel comfortable who I was. Never liked myself, always thought I was in the wrong family and all of that stuff. Took a drink and it made me 10 feet tall. It became my solution, you know, and it's like my mind, that computer in my brain started going, well, Ricky, you know, man, you drunk that wine last time, you know, and it, man, you was talking to the girls, you was dancing and everything. Why don't we do that again? So that became my solution. It started working, you know what I'm saying, until it didn't work anymore. So, my addiction took me from, through my military career, through my chef career, through working for the government career, when I really got rough was back in the 80s. And, you know, we was doing this shit before crack, man. You know what I'm saying? We was, you know, we was cooking our own in freebase. When I first hit a pipe, I hit a pipe freebase, you know. And so my life wasn't the same after that. You know what I mean? And but I drank liquor all my life. You know, I grew up in Birmingham, and my dad was a bootlegger. You know, and it wasn't like we had to go to the liquor store to get liquor. You know, Miss Carrie was down the street. She was a bootlegger. She sold wine and homebrew. Miss Vaughn up the street, she was a bootlegger. And if you wanted something to drink, oh, that's Bebe's boy. Go on, give him a half pint. You know, that kind of stuff. So it wasn't, we had to find somebody to get us liquor. You know, it was freely, you know, my dad, you know, that kind of thing. But my addiction, the DUIs, and everything that y'all knew about led me to living in the woods behind the labor pool, waking up every morning, going in the labor pool, going to work. Every now and then, because my sister felt sorry for me, she would feed me. But, and I was happy too. You know, people say, oh, man, living in the woods. Well, I ain't have to give anybody anything. That's where my life had took me. You know, the dope had said, you don't need to go to work. So I couldn't hold a job anymore. You're going to miss out. So the labor pool was all I had when I wasn't robbing you, when I wasn't robbing your cousin, when I wasn't robbing your grandma, whatever the case may be. You know what I mean? So my sister, who was my enabler, said, Ricky, I ran into these people on this job fair, and they'll pay you to find you a job. My profession is chef. All I've ever did is food service, you know. And so, man, she got me this application, and I filled out the application, and I still look good on paper, you know, that kind of thing. So I got this little job at this restaurant, Bash Rip Rocks. You know, it was a little dive bar over by Georgia Tech. You know what I mean? And but make a long story short, let me go back a little bit, because this is where it started. So I'm living over off Ashby Street, and I'm living in this dope house. Everybody in the house is infested. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Everybody in the house get high. You go from room to room, just whatever the case may be. So it was this girl there, and she was like one of the only girls on the face of the earth that would sell me sex. You know what I mean? I had crack girls going, no, Ricky, I don't want your money. Get your ass out of my face. Get away from me. No, I'm not. Pull your pants up, whatever the case may be. You know what I'm saying? And Renee was like one of the only women that would sell me sex, man, you know. And so one day Renee just disappeared. Everything in her room was the same, and we're talking back in 88, you know, they were finding women dead behind buildings, just all kind of stuff was going on like that back in the 80s, you know. And but Renee just disappeared. So one day I was going to this job, everybody thought, we just thought she was dead, you know. Just so I was going to this job one day down at Five Points train station, y'all. And it was like I ran into a ghost. There was Renee, and it was like, Renee, oh my goodness, we all thought you was dead. We thought you was dead. Where you been? Oh my goodness, give me a hug, whatever the case may be, right? And Renee had told me, she said, well, I got locked up, and when I got out of jail, they sent me right to treatment. And I had never knew anybody that went through treatment. And from that point on, Renee started 13-stepping and 12-stepping me at the same time. You know what I'm saying? You know, she was like, she started giving me this program. Ricky, this is what I've been doing, and I'm going to these Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and I'm doing this, la-da-da. It's kind of like she started, it's kind of like she opened my head up and started pouring the program in there. You know how you find somebody, they tell us not to do it, but she found me, and I became like her pet, you know, because she was my friend, and my idea was, I'll go to Timbuktu with you, long as some sex is on the other side of it, Renee. You know what I'm saying? That's all I was thinking about, you know? And she was like, Ricky, I'm going to come pick you up. I'm going to take you to a meeting. I'm going to take you to these meetings, right? And so here I am going to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Don't know anything about the program, right? I got 2 dime crack rocks. I got a half a pint of Mr. Boston and a fifth of Mad Dog. Going to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting with Renee. You dig what I'm saying? And So I sat in that meeting for a minute, didn't hear much, you know, because I had two rocks in my pocket, so it wasn't much of that I was going to listen to anyway. You dig what I'm saying? And but after that meeting, boom, dream come true. I'm having sex with Renee. Just good old times. You know, Ricky, I'm going to come pick you up tomorrow. I'm going to come pick you up tomorrow. I'm going to take you to another meeting. Take you to another meeting. And that's what she did, man. That's what she did. That's how I got the program. Didn't know anything about it. Didn't know anything about the program and wasn't willing to get the program. You know, they said God is funny, right? My God was funny, man. He was real funny because that's how I came into this thing. So she kept picking me up to meetings and she kept slowly giving me these little tidbits of hope, tidbits of hope, tidbits of hope, tidbits of hope. Then one time I was in a meeting with her, man, and I heard this guy say, Ricky, if you don't pick up, you won't use. He was sharing. He said, if you don't pick up, you won't use. And I asked Renee about that and she was telling me about that. Don't pick up, you don't use. So I didn't go through treatment, y'all. You know, I met Renee right off the street. So here's my scene right here. At the little restaurant I worked in, the same area where we go to get our vegetables and all of that was the beer cooler and everything. And let me tell you something. If I worked in your kitchen, in the 8 hours I was there, I'm going to steal as much to drink from you as I possibly can. You know, I might drink Mad Dog in the street, but I drink all the Chablis you got in your restaurant. Let me tell you. So that was it, man. I'm cool, going in the cooler, killing beers all day, stealing from these people. So that was my thing, you know, so that if you don't pick up, you won't use. If you don't pick up, you won't use. And talking to Renee on that, right? So I'm standing outside this cooler, y'all, and this is my first attempt. This is my first attempt. They say, you know, what's addiction? What's addiction? Addiction is repeating success. And this is where I got my first piece of success. You know, I'm standing outside this cooler and it's like a big old monster, you know, and it's like, Ricky, if you don't pick up a beer when you go in there, you won't drink it. If you don't pick up a beer when you go in there, you won't drink it. If you don't pick up a beer when you go in there, you won't drink it. So I run in and I'll get my carrots and I'll run back out. I'm like, phew, I made it. I made it. I made it. I made it. You know what I'm saying? Then I needed to go get some lettuce or something. It's like, Ricky, if you don't pick up a beer, you won't drink it. If you don't pick up a beer, you won't drink it. And I run in and get my lettuce and I come back out and it didn't happen. You know, this is the first thing, the first piece of joy of recovery that I got. And guess what, y'all? I couldn't wait to go to Renee, guess what I did? Guess what I did? I didn't steal anything at work today. I didn't steal anything to drink at work today. She was like, Ricky, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. Now, mind you, I'm drunk as hell by the time I got to it because I never said I wasn't going to stop drinking. I got my shift drink and I got me a half a pint of Mr. Boston when I got off work, but I couldn't wait to tell Renee what I had did, you know, and relate. She said, I'm proud of you, Ricky. I'm proud of you. And that started it. You know, Renee, I'm going to go to work today and I'm not going to steal anything. Renee, I'm going to go to work today and I'm not going to get my shift drink. Renee, when you see me today, I'm going to be dead sober. I'm not going to steal anything and I'm going to be sober when I get to you. And that's what started. My sobriety date is August 15th, 1990. So I just celebrated 33 years. So that's what started it, you know, and I don't know if it was that or the thing at that time of Renee being proud of me. It just meant the world. She could have told me anything and I would have did it. And that's what I needed. That's exactly what I needed. You know what I'm saying? So that went on with Renee. That went on with Renee. And the time came where Renee's sponsor and the women in her life were like, you need to leave Ricky alone. You need to stop having sex with Ricky. You need to stop sleeping with that Ricky, you know, because they really didn't like it, but they supported her. You know what I'm saying? They didn't like it, but they supported her. So no more sex with Renee, right? But right about that time, I was sitting in a meeting, right? And it was on me, y'all. It was on me. And that little boy inside of me said, Ricky, don't go get your check. You know what's going to happen if you go get your check. And that man in me was like, fuck that shit. Shit, Ricky Davis, I'm going to get my check. What the hell are you talking about? I'm not going to get my check. I'm going to get my check. And I'm sitting in a meeting. But that dope fiend was saying, I'm going to get my check because I was ready, y'all, for something about this Friday, the excitement of getting paid or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It was just on me that day. And I'm sitting in a meeting having this battle with myself. No, don't go get your check. I'm going to get my check. And guys, I was so scared. Right? It's this gentleman I had heard share in the meeting, right? And I went up to him. I said, Jerry, I'm scared to go get my check. Will you go with me to get my check? And guess what he said, y'all? He said, yeah, Ricky, I'll go with you to get your check. And I start falling in love with a man for the first time right then. Right then. And it started beautifully. And you know what? Jerry was the perfect person I needed in my life at that moment. The perfect person. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't a big God guy, but he was a guy like, Ricky, take your shoes off and walk through the grass. You know what I'm saying? He was one of those guys. Ricky, find a reason to love going to meetings. You know, he was like, Ricky, go buy a multivitamin and take a vitamin every day. I had never took vitamins, man. You know, it was like, can't wait to get up to take my vitamin. You know what I'm saying? That kind of shit. You know what I'm saying? It was just unbelievable to me, man. You know, I'm coming from living in the woods. You dig what I'm saying? And it was that kind of stuff, you know. And Jerry would take me to meetings, man. And he would say, Ricky, shake his hand and shake his hand. And we would go to all of these meetings, shake his hand. And he would say, Ricky, you go stand by that back door, that front door there, and everybody that go out of that door, you give them a hug and you tell them your name Ricky and you sick. And that's what I would do. Hey, my name Ricky and I'm sick. You know what I'm saying? And my nickname was Sick Ricky. You know what I'm saying? But you know, that's what Jerry gave me and that's what I needed at that time. You know what I'm saying? It was just like Renee. It was the ones, the people that I needed to give me that hope, you know. And at one point Jerry said, Ricky, I'm not going to go with you to get your check, but you got to go get your check and you can't cash it, but you got to bring it to me. And all I wanted to do was make Jerry proud. I was on the train, man, and couldn't wait to do my route, man, to get back to get Jerry my check. You know what I'm saying? It was just good shit. It was just good shit, man. That's what I got from Jerry, going to meetings, you know. And so Jerry took me to this one meeting. It was called Carpal, Georgia, and it was a treatment center over off Candler Road. And like I said, I didn't go through treatment, and I kind of connected there. I kind of got that feel of people coming in and out of treatment. I learned a lot there. The whole program was based around Joe and Charlie, and that's what I loved about it. And across the street at Free for All Baptist Church was an AA meeting. And I went to that AA meeting, man, and I fell in love with that AA meeting. And I ended up finding my first sponsor there. And I ended up working the steps with that sponsor at Free for All Baptist Church, man. And this guy turned out to be the perfect person. You know, I worked the steps by way of the big book, by way of the columns, by way of the instinct, by way of what did I do, what harm did I do, where did I set the ball in motion, and what are my exact wrongs on all of my columns. Everything that came out of my fourth step, I had everything that I needed to work 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, period. That's how I worked the steps. That's how Willie taught me how to do the steps. And that recovery center, I ended up teaching a relapse prevention class there for 3 years and loved every minute of it. Loved every minute of it, you know, as I went on, you know. But, okay, so Carp did the steps. I'm catching up with myself. I got a cheat sheet up here. So I ended up, Carp I love because I got so much out of it, man. But, you know, the thing that I got out of it the most was the instincts. Man, the way Willie did it at that time and started teaching me about these instincts. You know, what made me tick, man, the social security and the sex instinct. These things that were out of whack that made me crazy. It just brought it all into light, y'all. It brought it all into light for me. And he would say, Ricky, check your instinct. I mean, I would get on the bus and speak to the bus driver and he didn't speak to me. And it's like, okay, what instinct was harmed there? Cause I'm ready to go cuss this motherfucker out for not speaking to me. You know what I'm saying? What instinct was harmed here? You know, I start checking everything, you know, and doing that point, man, it's like, I believe I learned everything I've needed to stay sober for 33 years in my first 60 days. Because the first thing I learned, they say a sick mind can't heal a sick mind. But yeah, I had a sick mind, but when I got here, you guys gave me new information. And that information allowed me to change my thinking. And when it allowed me to change my thinking, it changed my action. And it changed who I was. You know, you guys said, play the tape all the way out. You know, man, that was a big thing when I first came in recovery. Ricky, what happened? Yeah, you're thinking about taking a drink, but what's going to happen if you take that drink? This. This gentleman that became my first sponsor said, Ricky, think of five things you would lose if you took a drink. And when you think about taking a drink, you recite those five things. And for me, man, it wasn't big things. You know, I wasn't looking for God in the clouds because that just wasn't me when I got here. You know what I mean? It was things like, okay, I own a pack of cigarettes and all 20 of them are mine. You know, I'm not out hunting butts in front of the Kroger. You dig what I'm saying? That, you know, I kept a motor car for 7 days straight. You know, back in the old days, y'all don't know about that. We used to sell our motor car. Now y'all sell y'all phones and shit. We used to sell our motor car. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, when you get down to that last thing, but, you know, it was things like that, man, that I was taking my vitamin. And I would be on the train or something happened, and I'm thinking about taking a drink. And it was like, no, Rick, if you take a drink, you're going to lose this. If you take a drink, you're going to lose this. If you take a drink, you're going to lose this. And what that did was, it gave me a sledgehammer, guys, against my own thinking. You know, all I ever thought was drink. Now when I think about taking a drink, I got something to use against it. You guys told me, if you don't know what to do, Ricky, sit on your hands. You know what I'm saying? And every time I sat on my hands and I got to that point, what it was saying was, I'm surrendering. I'm scared. I'm sitting on my hand. Leave me alone. I'm not going to take a drink. Shut up. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm surrendering. I'm giving up against my thinking. That's what it did for me. Because, guys, I got sober on MARTA. I didn't drive. Everywhere I went was on the bus. Everywhere I went was on the train, or I was walking. You know what I mean? And the world didn't change for me. You know, there'd be somebody on the bus with a brown paper bag, and there went my alcoholic thinking. You know what I'm saying? Is he going to drink it? Ooh, wonder what kind of beer it is. Oh, he's opening the bag. There he's going. He's popping it. Wonder if the bus driver's going to see him. Bus driver's not going to see him. He's popping it. It's going up to his lips. You know, that kind of crazy stuff. And there went my head. You dig what I'm saying? So I needed some against that. Well, he can drink. Those people in the meeting said, if I don't pick up a drink, I won't get drunk. You know, and so those are the things that you guys gave me that I needed at that time, you know, You know, it was just freaking awesome, man. You know, so my first sponsor had told, oh, check this out, y'all. So in taking those vitamins and almost eating right and eating meals and drinking water, that's another thing Jerry told me. He said, Ricky, practice drinking water. You know, I had never practiced drinking water. You know, and so it was this one day, I was on the toilet, right? And there it came, the turd of a lifetime. And it was cold, and it was full, and it was long, and it wasn't going to stop. And I'm thinking, like, what the hell is going on here? Is it going to stop? Like, I'm trying to look, you know what I'm saying? You know, and it was just awesome. You know, man, I started going to meet and telling everybody about this turd, man. I told my sponsor about this turd. Man, you can't believe what happened to me. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I was telling my sponsor about it, and he was like, Ricky, be grateful that all you've done to your body, it'll still make a turd. You understand what I'm saying? Because, yeah, y'all clapping and y'all laughing, but this is going to get you. Some of y'all are going to relate to this like real good. for years before that, every time I went to the bathroom, I had the runs. Who else? Every time I went to the bathroom, I had the runs. I was constipated. I had the runs for 10 years, man. You know what I'm saying? So I was grateful, man, that those things like that are the things that got me. You know, and some people, if you're new here, and because I wanted to win one of those people that believed in God, and I hated God, and all my life, the people in my life told me, God gonna strike you down, and God don't like people like you, Ricky, and God don't like people that think like you. So when I came in here, I'm glad it didn't have anything to do with God. You know, I'm so happy it didn't have anything to do with God. You know, Jared told me, he said, Ricky, every time you pass by the mirror, you look in the mirror and you tell yourself you love you. And I couldn't do it. You know, I would pass by the mirror. Yum, yum, yum. You know what I'm saying? Yum, 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 yum. Yum, 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 yum. You know, but I kept practicing it. I kept practicing it. Till one day I could go in the mirror and say, I love you, Ricky. I love you, Ricky. I love you, Ricky. And that's still one of my habits today. That's still one of my habits. You know? They said, you know, if your God need to be your doorknob or whatever the case may be. Those are the things that I needed when I was young, guys. Those are the things that helped me to get where I am. The doorknob was my God, you know, because I could grasp that. And let me tell you, I got to know a whole lot of doorknobs because my Tuesday meeting, I'd be like, oh, doorknob, I can't believe I'm here. You can't believe what happened to me before I got here. And I'm grabbing the doorknob so good. I told you last Tuesday I would be back. And every meeting I went to, I was in love with that doorknob because I made it back to that meeting. That's what I needed. It might not work for you. I ain't saying that's going to work for you, but I was in love with every doorknob I went to, you know, every doorknob that I pulled open to go into a meeting, I made another meeting. So that's what I needed to believe in, you know, but my God showed itself. You know, I needed a hooker God. So I told y'all that. Renee's sponsor told her, you need to stop having sex with Ricky. So what happened? Old behavior, old attitudes, you know, I started going back. Cause let me tell you, 4, 5, 6 years before I came into the program, y'all, there was no woman on the face of this earth that would tell you, ooh, I just love being around Ricky. He's just some kind of a man. No, that might have been y'all. Y'all might have been married or y'all might have been this. No, my addiction took me from dating. It took me from clubs. It took me from bars. It robbed me of all of that. Every time I had sex with somebody, it was because I had the dope or I had the money. Or I was living in the life at that time. There was nobody wanted to be with me. You know, so when Renee wasn't giving me that sex, I went back to old behavior. And the sad thing about that old behavior was I wasn't telling anybody about what I was doing. I'm leaving meetings, going, picking up crack girls. You know what I'm saying? Because I still crave that manhood. That's where I found my manhood, that I had the money and you had the sex and you do what I tell you to do. It was so embedded in me. You know what I'm saying? That's what I went back to. You know, so I'm with this girl one time, right? And she just talking to me like, and I'm like, hurry up, you know, and all of it, and got my money. And got my money. You know how we are, right? You goddamn talking that shit to me. Just give me my money back. You ain't gonna, you know, and I'm like that, man. And next thing I know, she talking to me all crazy and I'm talking to her all crazy. And now I got about a throat, man, and she turning blue and stuff and all of this kind of crap. And I'm wondering, Ricky, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? You know? I didn't get my $10 back, nor did I get what I was looking for, but it scared me so bad, I told my friend what was going on. I shared that secret. And you know what he said to me? You know what he said to me? He said, Ricky, if you're going to do it, don't do it by yourself. So we would get in his car, and we would ride around, and we would find a girl, and I'd say that one, and he would get out of the car, I would call her over, I would have sex in his car, we would get finished, he would get back in the car, and me and him would go on. That's what he did for me. That's what I needed at the time. You know, because I couldn't stop doing what I was doing. But let me tell you the cool thing about that. When I told my secret, and this is the beautiful thing about having men in our life. When I told my secret, I did that 2 more times with him. We did that 2 more times. But you know what? Jerry, I'm feeling like it. I'm feeling like it. I'm feeling like it. Where, Ricky, you need to just go on over there and masturbate and do what you need to do for yourself. Ricky, you need to go over there and watch a little porn and take care of yourself. Ricky, you need to do, hey, this is what I'm feeling like. I don't want to do it, but this is what I'm feeling like. They say, you know, they tell that joke about the horse thief, right? Where you got a sober horse thief if you take away the alcohol. Yeah, you might be even took away the alcohol. You know what I'm saying? But now, you know, I'm talking to other men and I'm going to meetings and I'm on time at work and I'm paying my bills. Yeah, I might still be stealing horses over here because I don't want to let those horses go. But yeah, I'm doing all of these good things over here. I'm pulling people into my network and I'm talking to new people and all of that. But I still don't want to let go of these stealing horses over here. But every time I want to steal a horse now, I'm calling somebody, telling them, hey man, I'm thinking about stealing a horse. Well, Rick, come on, meet me at the Waffle House. You ain't got to steal a horse. You know what I'm saying? That was the difference. That was the difference in Stan. You know what I'm saying? Well, I ain't stealing horses no more, but I'm damn sure still stealing these chickens. So what I'm going to do about these chickens? You know, I want to stop stealing these chickens, but I ain't stealing horses. But then I can work on that too, because I'm sharing with him now that, man, I don't want to steal horses and I'm still stealing horses. You know, that's how it worked. You know, when I first came in this program, I came in so ignorant. So ignorant. I ain't got nothing to talk to a man about. What I'm going to talk to a man about? They keep telling me to get a man phone number. What I'm going to get a man phone number for? I ain't got nothing to talk to a man about. Why they keep telling me to get a man phone number? You know what I'm saying? Before the meeting in, getting up, leaving out, all of that kind of stuff. That's the mentality I had, you know. My sponsor, Willie, my first sponsor, said, Ricky, every meeting you go to, you get a number in that meeting. I don't care how you get the number. You hear a man share in the meeting. You walk up to him after the meeting and say, hey, man, I like what you shared. Put your hand out, shake his hand and say, hey, can I get your phone? That's all you got to do. You ain't got to go to bed with him. You ain't got to marry him. You ain't got to nothing. Just get the number. You know what I'm saying? And he said, Ricky, take time in your night. Read one paragraph out of the big book. And you call three men and you start the conversation off with that paragraph you read out of the big book. And let me tell y'all what was so, they say, what's addiction? Repeating success. When I started doing that, man, and I started meeting men, and they'd be like, well, you know, you don't remember me and I don't remember you. You gave me your number at a meeting. Oh, that's cool, man. How you doing? We go to this meeting on Tuesday night. Why don't you join us? We used to meet up on Saturday morning at the Waffle House. Why don't you join us? All of that kind of stuff started happening. But you know, if I never practice networking with men, I'll never network with men. You know, I heard a guy share at a meeting during that time that I didn't call anybody before I relapsed because I didn't want anybody to talk me out of relapse. I never wanted to be there. I never thought about drinking, thought about using, fantasized about it, dreamed about it, or whatever about it that I didn't tell somebody. It never goes unchecked. I don't care if it's a commercial, but it never goes unchecked with me. Somebody will know about it. Because if I slip, I'm going to slip. You know? He told me, he said, Ricky, there's a personality that lives inside of you. And it's that personality's job to get you drunk. And it's mad you done took away its alcohol. It's mad you done took away its dope. It's mad you hanging out with these A&A people and all of that stuff. Mad as hell. And this gentleman suggested to me, he said, Ricky, give that personality a name. And when it rears its head, give it the respect that it deserves. And I just kind of blew it off. Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, my middle name, Earl. I'll call it Earl, right? So, I just went on. So I'm on the train one day. So what's addiction? Repeating success. So I'm on the train one day, right? And I don't know why this girl just looked like she was somebody that I could give money to get sex from. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sitting on there, and this voice was like, Ricky, go ahead, go over there. You got $25 in your pocket. Go over there and say something to her. Then I'm like, no, I know if I go over there and say something to her, I'm going to end up in a trap. I'm going to end up getting high. I'm going to end up drinking. Leave me alone. Go over there and say something to her. Go ahead. You ain't had your dick sucked in a while. Go over there. You can get to some head. You ain't had none in a while. Go ahead, Ricky. Go over there and say something to her. And I'm getting crazy in the head. I'm on the train, sitting on my hands. You know what I'm saying? Talking to myself like a crazy person. Leave me alone. And all of a sudden said, Shut up, Earl. I'm not going over there. And that's when it clicked. That's when it clicked for me. who Earl was. That's when it clicked. Two stations later, she got off at Lindbergh Station, and there went Earl. See there, you stupid motherfucker. I told you to go over there and say something to her. Now she even got off the train. You ain't gonna get nothing now. I told you what to do. I told you what to do. See there. And I'm crazy now, man. I'm crazy. I get to Five Point Station, y'all. I'm ready to go get hot. It got me. But then it kicked in. Because you know what? Because I had been practicing talking to men. I got to Five Point Station, got a phone booth. Yes, a phone booth. Called up some people, you know what I'm saying? Called the first guy, talked to his answering machine. No voicemail. You know, nobody had cell phones during them days, but Tupac and Biggie, you know, not people like me, you know what I'm saying? So we would have to call people, and you talk to their answering machine at home. Then they get home from work, they listen to your message on their answering machine, then they would beep you, then you got to go find a phone booth or something and they call them back. Man, it was work. You know what I'm saying? So I'm at Five Point Station talking to the first guy. Man, I was on the train, and this girl got on, and then she wanted to, then I wanted to get on this. Then it was different. And I'm talking to this answering machine, but see, I took action. And he wasn't there. I called up another guy. Boom, got his answering machine. Man, I was on the train, and this girl was on the train. I'm ready to go use all I want to do. Boom, he wasn't there. Called the next guy, and he answered the phone. Man, I was on the train. You know what I'm saying? I took that action because y'all had taught me to start practicing. You know, now I can get back on the train and go about my business. Man, there are places all over Atlanta, I could tell you. It used to be a payphone right there, and I remember standing at that payphone, crying my eyes out because the dope was on me. Go somewhere else. It used to be a payphone right there, and I remember being at that payphone, crying my eyes out because the dope was on me. You know what I'm saying? So I got back to my sponsor, and I told him what happened on the train. He said, Ricky, that's what I mean. It'll never, ever, ever get any worse than it was today. If you never believe the lie that it'll be different, you'll never take another drink one day at a time. When I went to CARP, right, and I told you they did the program by Joe and Charlie, working chapter 3, it's all about the lie. It's about what happened to the alcoholic before he takes the drink. You know, nobody relapsed drunk. Nobody relapsed sober. You know, we're dead sober when we relapse. You know, so there's something in me that's driving me. Bill Wilson said, Dr. Sifford said, there's something in these men that's driving him. At CARP, I got introduced to the disease concept. At CARP, I got introduced to the fact that I have an allergy to alcohol. And I could never, ever safely drink alcohol again. How did I come to that realization? Sitting in meetings listening to y'all. Y'all would say, man, I would go to the bar and say, I'm only going to have 2 beers. You know, have them 2 beers. And the next thing you know, 4 hours later, I'm dead drunk, leaving the bar and all of that kind of stuff. That happened to me. You know, those times when I'm at in the damn crack house, right? And I'm down to my last dime, and all I got is my Monica money. And Earl would say, quietly and calmly, y'all, go ahead and spend it. You can borrow $10 from somebody at work. Yeah, that's a good idea. And boom, I spend my last $10. Suck it up just like that, and guess what Earl would do right after that? He would say, Ricky, you done screwed over everybody at work. Ain't nobody at work gonna loan you $10. You owe everybody at work money. See, he didn't tell me that before he got me to spend it. That's how powerful he is. See, that's how powerful he is. That's how powerful he is. Think about it. Think about it, man. I told my sponsor, this is what happened to me. For 33 years, I've yet to believe the lie. We are like men who have lost their legs. We never grow new ones. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. I'm sold on that, y'all. There ain't no doubt in my mind on that. I've yet to believe the lie that if I take a drink of liquor, it'll be different. I know that I will never, ever, ever, ever crave alcohol if I don't pour it down my throat. So Bill tells me the problem of the alcoholic center is in his mind. The obsession. The obsession is the problem. The obsession will convince me something different. But if I never pour it down my throat, I'll never crave alcohol. So my sponsors say, Ricky, if you detox off alcohol, the only way you can take a drink is out of habit. Because Dr. Sipworth felt like there's something that's driving these men. There's something inside of these men that's driving them. And it was the physical craving. If I never pour alcohol down my throat, I'll never experience that. But there's something up here that will always take me back to that sense of ease and comfort that will come by a few drinks. And chapter 3 explains that so wonderfully. The man of 30. He felt like he had, because he had been in treatment for that. I ain't going to say that. Because he had been in treatment for 30 days. He felt like he had qualified himself to drink like other men. That's a lie. It tells us in the book, Jim said, I can have whiskey with my milk if only I take it on a full stomach. That's a lie. And then he said, I figured I wasn't being any too smart. And this is somebody that had relapsed 6 times. They had worked with Jim 6 times. So maybe his God was saying, hey, Jim, you done been through this before. Why don't you get up and call somebody or somebody? He said, I vaguely sensed I wasn't being any too smart. But the obsession, because he hadn't poured the liquor and the milk down his throat yet, the obsession convinced him of the lie. The mere fact that I can take a drink of liquor on a full stomach if I mix it with my milk, that's as crazy as you can get. That's like me saying, well, if I don't fit the rock on the can and hit it on the pipe, I can do just one. That's how crazy that sounds, don't it? Listen to it now. That's how crazy that sounds, man. You know what I mean? But see, the obsession will tell me that, Ricky, if you mix the Mad Dog and chase it with the Budweiser, you won't get as drunk if you chase the Budweiser with the Mad Dog. And then I had that thought, and if I don't tell y'all about it, you know, a couple of days later or a week or so later, and it said, well, you know, Ricky, you remember when we was talking about that Mad Dog and that, but now if you chase it with the Mad Dog, you won't get it drunk. And if I don't tell y'all I'm thinking about that, a month later he'll come back. Now, Ricky, you remember when we was having that? And let my wife piss me off or something, or the kids talking back or something. You remember that conversation we was having about that Mad Dog chasing with that beer? And the next thing you know, that obsession will convince me that if I chase the Mad Dog with the beer, I won't get it drunk. If I don't tell y'all what I'm thinking, you know, if I don't tell y'all what I'm thinking, that's the cool thing about this, man. If I don't believe that lie, y'all taught me how not to believe the lie. That's where I got the information here. Rick, if you don't pick up, you won't get drunk. That's powerful. Y'all know how powerful that is? No treatment. That's all I had that catapulted me to here. It wasn't a big step, but it catapulted me to here. That's all I had if I didn't pick it up. How do I not pick it up? You guys, sir, I needed people to teach me not about God and spiritual things. And guys, don't get me wrong now. 33 years, I got a God of my understanding, and she is pretty as a picture, let me tell you. So that's it. But, you know, in the beginning, I had to get to that point. You know, and I tell you, the guy I always say about that hooker God, I would tell God, God, you know I don't want to mess with none of these women in the program. And you know I'm a man. This is what I would do before I went and picked up the hooker. Now, I ain't going up in no truck. I'll get it done in the bushes or something. I ain't going up in no house because somebody might rob me in there. She's going to have to go in the bushes. We're going to go on side of a house, but I ain't going in no house. You with me, ain't you, God? And me and the God that I believed in, my hooker God, went and got us a hooker. See, where would I have been if I could not in that moment believe in that hooker God that I needed to believe in? Because I could not stop doing what I was doing at that time. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm praying to that. I'm praying to it and believing in it because I was caught up in my sickness. You know, Earl is a mother, man. Earl is a mother. Earl will convince. Let me tell you. Ooh, Lord. But let me tell you something, guys, especially if you're new. This is the cool thing about Earl. This is where I have power over Earl. You know, when you was drinking and that voice would say, Ricky, you've had 2/5 of Mad Dog already. Don't drive. And you argue with the voice. No, I can drive. I drive better when I'm drunk anyway. Go on out of here. You know what I'm saying? Or you tell yourself, okay, I got my check. I'm only going to get a 20, right? And I'm going to put 50 in my socks, and I'm put 20 over here, and I'm gonna get a $60 money order, and I'm gonna put 20 over there, and that's all I'm gonna do is this 20. See, I had to get started on a lie. Because that's a lie. Because the truth was, once I hit one, it was over. Every time, the same thing happened. But Earl would convince me to go out on that lie. Because that's what he needed to do. Earl's something else, y'all. But you know what's cool about it? Earl don't have hands. And Earl don't have legs. And Earl don't have a wrist. So Earl can say anything he wants to say between my ears. He can talk any trash he wants to trash between my ears. He can have any fantasy he wants to have. Pocket full of crack. On the beach, buck naked, with two twins. Ooh, this is good living right here. That's Earl's fantasy. He can have all the fantasy he wants between my ears, y'all. But see, Earl cannot walk to the liquor store and get himself a beer. He can't. He don't have legs. Earl had to convince the sober me. Though I woke up clean and sober this morning. I woke up loving who I am. Whatever the case may be, Earl has to convince the clean and sober me of the lie to go get him a beer. Because he can't do it himself. He can't do it himself. There's a lot of things I got resentment about. You, I love some Mad Dog, y'all. Mad Dog was my drink. Mad Dog and Mr. Boss. God damn. You know what I'm saying? At one point when I was in the military, all I drank was, I wasn't drinking much hard liquor, but I was doing a lot of blow and doing a lot of black beauties and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, it was Mad Dog and Private Stock. Y'all remember Private Stock? That was my drink. You know what I'm saying? But see, Earl's got to convince me to go get him drunk. I always say, and this is what y'all have taught me, thinking about a drink here and taking a drink here, there's a whole lot of recovery in between that. And this is not AA. This is Ricky. This is me saying this. I never thought about using, thought about drinking, ready to go, ready to give it up, that I never called another man in Alcoholics Anonymous and he didn't talk me out of it. That's just me. I ain't saying that'll work for nobody else, but that's just me. Whenever I tell y'all where I am, it takes the weight. It takes the weight. But if I never take the action to tell y'all where I am, I'm a goner. I'm a goner. They say men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I love that effect. You know? But now, I fell in love with calling other men. I fell in love with going to meetings. I fell in love with being sober. You know what I'm saying? I fell in love with riding my motorcycle, paying my bills, you know? All of those kind of things. The new addictions. The new addictions, man. And I just keep coming back. One day at a time. So, are you bringing new people into your life? Guys, if you're new, don't be like me. I ain't got nothing to talk to no man about. I ain't talking to a man. Hey, get some numbers, guys. Reach out to us. We're there for you. Man, there were so many people there for me in the beginning and now. Don't get me wrong. Because it's a lot of days I wake up and I want to stab my wife through the throat with a steak knife. Let me tell you. You know what I'm saying? Dude, you know, life goes on, man. You know, hey, get to talking about how much chrome is on your Harley, and I go to looking at my Harley, and the next thing you know, I need to get rid of my Harley because his Harley looks a little better than mine. You know what I'm saying? Bag me up in a corner and see how quick I'll lie to you. You know, I ain't perfect. I ain't perfect. But I'm still trying. You know, every day is a challenge, one day at a time. And I just keep coming back doing what y'all tell me to do. Doing what y'all tell me to do. Y'all got it. I was sharing with a gentleman in the meeting. And my sponsor told me, he said, Ricky, and this is not to talk about anybody else's journey, because we all have our journey. But it's a tidbit that helped me. He said, Ricky, when you hear somebody in the meeting saying, oh, I've been around this program this long, and I've been around this program that long. He said, Ricky, you go up to him and you ask him, what have you been doing? And when he tell you what he's been doing, you do the opposite. You know, because that's what you don't want to do. You know, they always say, how can you come to a 12-step program and not work the 12 steps? You know, rarely have we seen a person fail. You know, there are guys who come in and you know, I was in a meeting the other night and a gentleman said, you know, I came around this program and I never worked the steps and I never really got a sponsor. Guys, do you still, can you believe there's still people like that? There's still people that feel like they can come here and don't work a sponsor, don't work the steps, don't work a sponsor, don't get a sponsor, you know, because they were like me. You know, and if I didn't get it when I did, I probably would have been there also. You know, I go to meetings, right? And the joy for me, the thing that makes my recovery strong, is when I sit in a meeting and I hear a man come in that meeting and share with me that made it back alive and share with me about his relapse. He's telling me, Ricky, this is what I did. You don't have to. You never know what the man sitting next to you is going to. Don't feel ashamed about your relapse. Come to a meeting and share it. Somebody need to hear it. Somebody need to hear it. And it helps you. I've heard it helps you. When I talk about how I don't relapse, it helps me. But you know, that's been the joy of my recovery, man. You know, I love The Rock, man. When I first started coming, y'all, it was amazing what I got when I came here. And that's what made me keep coming back. You know, hey guys, work the steps, get a sponsor, do what you, run from the old you. Constantly run from the old you. They say, how do we grow spiritually? How do we grow spiritually? Well, growing spiritually is daily dying. I have to die somewhere. You know what I'm saying? You know, a fifth of Mad Dog is not chasing me down the street, came from the liquor store, knocked on my door, and tried to pour itself down my throat. But my thinking will always take me there. And you know, about a matter of fact, while I'm saying that, let me talk about how pissed I am about Morgan Davis. Shit. You know, when I stopped drinking, all they had was grape. Man, they got a damn Mad Dog look like a damn Christmas tree now, man. They got Red Jubilee and Tiki Wine and Lemon Lime, just all kinds. Nobody sent me no email or nothing. All the money I spent on Mad Dog. If you want to resent with the drink, that's a resentment, isn't it, man? But I tell you what, man, you know, I believe solely in the plan, program of action. I believe what happened when Bill Whitson sat in front of Dr. Bob and told him, when I throw up, it's green. And Dr. Bob said, you know what? When I throw up, it's green too. And they probably connected just like that. I wasn't a fly on that wall. But it's something Bill Wilson was on with that he gave to Dr. Bob that made a difference. Because you know, 2 weeks before, Dr. Bob had finally confessed to the Oxford group that he was an alcoholic. Everybody knew he was an alcoholic, right? So when Bill called up and said, hey, I'm a stockbroker from New York and I'm looking for a drunk, the people in the Oxford group were like, this is a gift from God for Dr. Bob. You know what I'm saying? Man, if I was in that room. But you know what? Every time I sit in a meeting, we have the joy to give to the next man what Bill gave to Dr. Bob. Renee became the first woman friend that I ever had in my life. You know, she became the first woman that taught me how to be a friend with no attachments. And if that wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't have never had that. You know, we all got our own journey. Your journey is not like anybody else's journey. Grab your journey. Every day I wake up, every morning I wake up, I cherish my sobriety. It comes before God. It comes before my kids. It comes before my family. It comes before everything. Because without my sobriety, I'll turn my back on everything else. Everything else. And you know, when I keep that attitude, y'all, the God of my understanding is saying, come on, Ricky, you're doing a great job. I got you. Go out. It's your choice today whether you want to take a drink of liquor or not. What are you going to do with that choice? Guys, it has been an honor to be on this stage at the Rock for like, 16 or 17 Rocks. I've watched other men up here. And it's, you just, Alan, thank you. Committee, thank you. Man, it is just an honor to be asked to do this. Thank you.